Just a couple of introductory things. Please note that the next five sessions we've got are not intended to make you absolute experts in every electoral system. The most important thing is that you get the broad principles of each electoral system. Second point is that there's more information in the handouts than there is in these presentations. So what Ken and I stress in these presentations is, again, the basics. There's a bit more in the handouts, there's more in the references, and if you really want details, then we can point you in the direction of other materials. So the thing is, for each system, is to get an idea of what the guts of the system is. Aha. I said, turn my mic on. I thought I did turn my mic on. It's red. Okay? Okay. Right. Okay, well, let's start with it then. Now, there we are. If there are more than two candidates contesting a seat, the candidate with the most votes needn't get a majority. And this is what majority systems are about. And here's an example. Let's say X is Vancouver. Y is Prince George and Z is Kamloops. You get the idea. Y wins, but Y does not get a majority. It gets a plurality. Y has a plurality of votes, but not a majority. And the question is, with majority systems, as Ken said this morning, when people started with plurality systems, after a while they thought, well, for some people, look, we're getting more than two candidates, more than two parties contesting elections. How can we make sure that the winning candidate gets a majority? Okay, so what do we do? How do you ensure the winning candidate gets a majority? Okay, two answers, or one answer really, but two ways of doing it. You force the voter to make a final choice between only two. With only two candidates, one of them's got to get a majority. I do leave out ties. Okay, there's always a tie, but we'll ignore that because it doesn't happen very often.
I'm sorry?
Question, how can it be done? Okay, answer. If no candidate gets a majority, have another election between the top two candidates. Okay, so you take Y, got 45 votes. So Y is the plurality winner, but doesn't get a majority. Z gets 40 votes, second most votes. Z continues. Poor old X gets 15 votes and is excluded. So the next election, a week or so later, if you've got 100 voters, you have a second election a week later. Let's assume Y gets 48 votes. Let's assume that X of the X's supporters who have to, they don't have an X to vote for, they have to vote for Y or Z. Three of them vote for Y. Z gets 12 of them and wins a majority. Now, this is an arbitrary example, but it illustrates another thing, and that is that in a two-way contest, the winner may not be the plurality winner. So you could say that the essence of majority systems is you don't always get the most chosen, but you get the least disliked. Okay. And I've just note for the second ballot that, of course, other people may change their minds too. If you've got an election a week later or a couple of weeks later, you may say, well, actually, I voted for Z, but I found out more about her, and I'm going to vote for Y anyway. But that's another story. We're interested mainly in how people vote between two candidates. So that's one solution. The second ballot, called, surprisingly, because there is a second ballot. Two rounds, runoff, all the same things. Okay, you force a majority choice by having two elections. Okay. We said that already. Okay. Note that the people who get majorities can win it either at the first election or at the second. So if you like, in the French election in 2001, France is something that has a second round system. It's a slightly modified one, but let's assume it's like the example I gave you. There are 577 seats in the National Assembly, which is the French parliament. Only 58 won majorities on the first election, And all the rest had to go for another election a couple of weeks later. All right, so this is just stating the obvious again. No candidate won a majority the first time. They won a majority on the second time. Any, is there another way of doing it? And the answer is yes. The alternative vote, AV. So this is another solution. Same problem, different solution. Why not get people to try and make two votes on the ballot the first time round? So you only need one election. Okay, so that means that if they have a number of choices, then if people don't get majorities, you can look at their second choice. Okay, so you get the general idea. You can vote one and two or whatever. And if your one doesn't get in, you have to, instead of having another election, you simply see where the twos go. But in order to do that, you need a preferential ballot. And a preferential ballot simply means that you've got to, instead of putting ticks and crosses, you have to put ones and twos and threes. And here's an example. I've got an example again, 100 votes, three candidates. This time I've given them name, Fred, Ling, and Menke, but they're still the same X, Y, and Z. And a voter must rank the candidates by putting one, two, and three next to the candidates' names. Now, again, in the alternative vote systems vary. Sometimes you've got to express preferences for all of them, some for just the number of vacancies to be filled, which is usually one. The district magnitude is usually one, doesn't have to be one, usually one. And some you have to fill them all in. If you don't fill them all in, your ballot is not a valid ballot. Okay. And the successful candidate must gain a majority of valid votes, one more than half the total of valid votes. Okay. Now, here's a fine ballot paper. This is obviously not a real one. It's an imitation one. There's Fred, Ling, and Menke. And at great expense to the PowerPoint presentation, I have drawn in these numbers. Okay, one, two, three. Now, you realize, of course, you don't have to do that. You can do one, two, three. Okay, or, of course, you can do one, two, three. Or, when you think about it, there are six combinations. Okay, so with three candidates that you've got to rank one, two, three, you've got six combinations. So how do you know who's voting for what? Well, those ballots are Fred's ballots. And if you look where the ones are, that's a vote for Fred. So the first time you count in an alternative vote, you count where the ones are, and either of those two ballots or both those ballots are Fred's, they're Ling's, and those are Menke's. So when you first time you count them, that's what you count. You count where the ones are. Okay? Now, we know the results because it's the same example as the one before. Fred gets 15, Ling gets 45, Menke gets 40. So Ling is the plurality winner. And in the first past the post, in a plurality system, Ling would be elected. But, of course, in AV, that's not good enough. So X, you say, well, X has got the fewest first preferences, so X is excluded. And you then start looking at distributing Fred's preferences between Ling and Menke. Okay, now those ballots that look like that, where the two is, they go to Ling. All right, there are three of those. And there are 12 preferences which give preferences to Menke. And it follows as the night of the day that Fred's already gone, but Ling has got 45 and 3, which makes 48, and Menke has got 40 and 12, which is 52, and has a majority and wins. Okay, now this is all fairly obvious, but it's worth stating, because what you're doing is you are, in fact, giving Fred's voters, people who voted for Fred, a kind of second choice. Ling's voters and Menke's voters don't have the chance to change their minds, as in the second ballot. They've already written down their preferences. So preferences are only distributed from the least successful candidate or candidates. Okay. Now, this example was too good to miss. This is put on by the South Australian electoral office, and it didn't work well with my computer. We hope it works with this one. Yes, it does. Okay. This is a man, actually, for those of you who watched Australian Rules, this is an Australian Rules umpire. Okay, so he tells you a little bit of history, but what we're really interested in is what he calls exclusions, bottom up. You can see the whole thing here, okay? This is a great heap of ballots. Ken's going to show you how this works early on this afternoon. So, and then it tells you that you've got to work out what a majority is. That's the dotted line. And then that shows you the preferences that are going to be distributed. And if we didn't have the sounds, you can hear it's clicking away. And there they are, racing to the top. I could speed it up, but it's quite an interesting exercise. Okay, so this one here would be the winner, but no one reaches that magic majority, therefore you continue. Again, just showing what the ballots look like, you then allocate the second preferences. Okay, there we go. And then you do it again, because no one's got a majority. I have to say, no one's won, I'm sorry. No one's won. I continue. You knock off the next one. Again, little ballot, that's what it looks like. And away you go. A different colour to show you how they go. Still no one has won. Don't forget there are five candidates, so you can continue. Has anyone won? No, no one's won. And then continue. So you can watch this for hours at home. And yes, we have a winner. Okay. Now they make the point here that you say, well, isn't that a bit unfair? But no, I've gone too far. All right, well, we'll stop there. I should go back again. But whatever. What I was saying was, I didn't let it finish. What it pointed out was that there were a lot more people who voted against the person with the plurality winner than who voted. In other words, the person who won was the least preferred rather than the least, start again, was the least disliked, not the most preferred. Okay, let's just continue with this now. Okay, now the question is, why would you go for a system like this anyway? You have to number the ballots. It looks a bit complicated. I mean, is it just that you want precision? Is there any kind of hidden agenda? Why do people go for the alternative vote? Well, as says there, to reduce the representation of small parties. So what usually happens is that if there are a number of medium-sized parties and one or two largish parties and think that they can benefit from a majority system, then they will introduce it because it tends to reduce the number of minor parties, or at least it reduces their representation. It may not affect their voters, at least in the short term, but it means that the large parties can benefit from the preferences of the smaller ones. So the French introduced this after the Third Republic, after the beginning of the Fourth Republic. They've had it on and off since, mainly on. And it was designed as a system to exclude representation from the large number of small parties that existed under the Third Republic, or the Fourth Republic. It's introduced in the Fifth Republic in 1958. So that was, if you like, electoral engineering to produce the kind of two-party system or two-party groupings that the French in the large parties thought would be a good idea. The other reason for doing it is the one why it was adopted in Australia, and it's been used in Australia since the 1920s. Actually, from before the 1920s, but in the national government since 1920, and that was that the Conservative Party split into a large Conservative Party and a smaller Conservative Party that was based in the country, in the rural areas of Australia. And these two parties decided that they didn't want to let the Australian Labor Party slide through the middle and win the seats on a plurality of votes, even though the combined non-Labor vote would have been larger. So again, as with the French, it was introduced for purely altruistic reasons and for the good of the country. So, and of course, we know the same thing happened in BC in 1952. The Conservatives and the Liberals thought that their coalition had fallen apart a bit, but they may have disliked each other, but they disliked the prospect of a CCF government even more. So they thought that if they could arrange for their preferences to be exchanged, then all would be well. Okay, did they achieve their goal? Well, in France, yes, they did. They did knock out a lot of small parties, but small parties have continued to be an influence. But nonetheless, the French politics is still largely divided in terms of representation between two large party groupings. In BC, only partially. It's true the CCF was kept out of office, but the beneficiary was the new party, the Social Credit Party, as Ken said. Some people have argued that the Conservatives and the Liberals hadn't been to a session like this and forgot how, or didn't think about, how the preferential system would work. But don't forget, it's only the smallest parties that are excluded. And if you've got three or four parties, there's no guarantee about where the second preferences will go. So what you have to be, if you're going to benefit under an alternative vote, is to be one of the two bigger parties. If you slip to number three, then you may be excluded, and your preferences may go to someone who isn't one of the top two candidates. Actually, if you want to see a BC ballot from 1952, at the back of the slides is the copy of the cover of the Electoral Act of 1952, and there's a ballot there, and the instructions on the paper about how you should fill in the ballot. Now in Australia, it's worked. It's worked, been there for almost for over 80 years, and the beneficiaries have been at various times large parties of both the left and the right. It's tended to favour the right more than the left until the 1970s. And then there were a number of parties on the left, like the Australian Democrats, or leftish, and the Greens, and the preferences tended to flow to the Australian Labor Party. So up until the 1950s and 60s, the Labor Party thought the alternative vote was the work of the devil and should be removed, but they've now warmed to it and don't think it's so bad after all. Or maybe before that, are there any questions thus far about the alternative vote? I'll get on to evaluations and things, but are there any questions about the mechanics? Yes.
Hi, does it ever happen that when you do the alternative vote, if there ends up being three people or three parties still in there, like say one person gets 52 and one gets 20 and one gets like 28, does that ever happen?
You have to get a majority in the
end.
Yeah,
but so you got 52, but the other two other parties got say 20 and 28. Does that happen where you still have the majority but there's three in there instead of a two?
Well, the ballots always have to add up to 100. Okay.
Right.
So once someone gets 51, when a minor candidate or a small party candidate is excluded, and those votes go to one of the other candidates who gets more than 50%, then they're elected. So there's always a majority under the AV. It may take, as with that example we saw from South Australia, you may have to exclude, there were five candidates, you may have to exclude three before you get a winner. But there will always be a winner.
So are you saying then that the other ones don't get represented at all. If you have the majority person who's in there with 52, the other ones are just completely even.
And if a large party gets elected in the first on the ones, then of course the second preferences, or no one's second preferences, get counted.
So it's not like in BC where we've got two parties right now in legislature. They would just have one.
No, they'd all, well, I don't know, if they'll run the last election on an AV, who knows? It could be the New Democrats might have won an extra seat or two. But for each electoral district that you have AV, one of them is going to, there's going to be a winner, either on the first round, in which case no one's preferences are counted, or after counting preferences. Okay, Wilf.
So in all of these systems, you have to, the voter would have to provide with all the preferences, even if you had candidates who you simply would not want there, period. You still have to put a number beside their name?
It depends. For there are seven systems in Australia that have the AV. For five of them, you must fill in all the squares. But that's a choice for the people making the law. I should say the reason why they usually make it compulsory is because the party that introduced it wants the second preferences of one of the smaller parties. It doesn't want people not expressing a preference. But it's a matter of choice. You don't have to do that. And, of course, people point out that if you vote for a big party, your second preferences are never going to be counted. It's only the preferences of the least successful candidates that get assigned. Yes, Ken.
You were saying that this system seems to benefit the top two parties and not the the third one, for example.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say that the third one hasn't or gained some sort of power in the fact that the top two parties would be more likely to pander to the third party in order to get their secondary votes?
That's exactly you were anticipating. But yeah, that's one of the consequences of having AV. How important it is and how significant is a matter of taste. But yes, that's one of the effects. John.
Hypothetically, what happens if it's a 50-50? Does it go to re-election?
I don't know. There are various ways of doing it. In some systems, the returning officer, the brave returning officer, tosses a coin, may have an extra vote. If it's that close, there's always going to be arguments about people who are on the roll who might not be, whether that was a two or a squiggle. There's going to be, if it's that close, you have another election. Yes, well, so Jack could give the casting vote, yes. Douglas.
Has there ever been a situation where they've set the majority line at greater than 50%, such as 55 or 60%, to follow up his question?
Not that I'm aware of, and it would be it would be a bit odd. Yes, I don't think so. Yes, any more? Last question.
How long does it take to typically reach a decision in that kind of system?
Things like the alternative vote and the STV that we're talking about next weekend, one of the criticisms of them is it does take longer to count the vote. Sometimes there's a kind of misapprehension. A lot of the countries that have, well, it does take longer because it's more complicated. You've got to look at the ballots, although you can increasingly now scan them. You can put them through a computer scanner, and you can check them because you've got the hard copy. It's not electronic voting, but electronic counting. But countries that have the alternative vote or STV, different system, but still requiring numbers, often are very generous about the amount of time to which votes can come in by postal or absentee ballots. So sometimes you can't start counting until a week or so, or 10 days after the election day, simply until you've got all the votes. But it is more complicated to count, but it doesn't stop. And say in really close elections, then you may have to go through several recounts to make sure you've done the sums properly. Okay. So let's look at majority. I should say, most people say stable government, and Ken agrees with me, it's not a happy term. It simply means stable. I mean, one person's stability is another person's boring, predictable lack of change, conservatism, just like another person's instability is another person's responsiveness. So it's but basically, stable government means how likely it is to produce a majority government, because that's what stable government usually means from its supporters. And the majority system, surprise, surprise, is designed to produce one-party government or well-established coalition governments with majority support. That's what it's supposed to do. So, yes, it scores very highly on that. What about electoral accountability? It encourages two-party competition. Necessarily, it's there to generate a dichotomous, a choice between two large parties or two large groupings. The contests are between government and opposition. Voters have a choice of who will be in government. That's another one of the arguments in favour of simple systems like plurality and majority. You choose, or ones that produce majorities, you get a choice both of your representative and of who will be in government. So, yes. Now, this is the point that was mentioned over here. There is some ability for small parties to pressure large parties, but only at election time. So, for example, a large party might say, yes, a small party might want, supposing it was an environmental party, you say, well, we want to limit greenhouse gases, and one of the parties will say, yes, we'll limit greenhouse gases more than the other lot. And so the small party will say to its voters, give your second preferences to party X, whatever it is, party Y. But there's no guarantee. There's no way that the small party can punish the large party, at least not until the next election. It may be able to say the next election time, these people didn't do what they promised they were going to do, and we're going to move our preferences somewhere else. So there is some ability for small parties to pressure large parties, but only at election time, and who knows what the party does after. Voters do have a choice of supporting a local candidate. So it's essentially because most alternative vote systems now have district magnitude of one, you do have your local candidate, and of course, if it is one, then you do have a local member who you can see and ask questions about from, to, whatever. Parliamentary checks, well, and the role of the MLA, majority government frees government from serious parliamentary scrutiny. If you've got a majority, you can dominate the parliament. No committee is set up to look into embarrassing things. The business of the House is run by the government. It permits premier-dominated style of government. But, and, all MLAs have the same electoral standing and a similar identifiable constituency. Now, of course, that's there because some of the later electoral systems we look at, that's not true. Say, in mixed systems, the MLAs have different electoral standing. Some are chosen from a district, and some are chosen from a party list. So, makes a difference. Does it give fair representation of poll? How does it give fair representation of parties and social groups? Because it's a majority system, there are likely to be, I've been very, very cautious there and said there may be, there usually are big distortions between vote shares and seat shares. So it's like a plurality system in that. It favours big parties, they will get a bonus in seats. The winning party will usually get a bonus in seats. And majority systems have underrepresented, if you look at the places where majority systems have been adopted, they underrepresent some groups, women and minorities, in electoral and legislative politics. Political parties, majority systems produce a small number of large parties. Again, that's their design. There's some incentive for small parties to exist and to express distinctive interests. But, again, all they can do is give preferences. Well, and they can, of course, reduce the vote of the large parties. Every small party believes one day it will become a big party, or at least small do. So you've got to start somewhere. So small parties, and maybe some big parties were small parties once. But by and large, the large parties tend to be catch-all parties, but they may have to listen to smaller, more ideological parties at election time. And as I say, bargaining over government policy takes place only within the governing party. It's in government. Once the election's over, the questions about government policy are made within the governing party, or the bureaucracy only. I always like saying, or the bureaucracy, because, of course, most lobbying of majority governments is done via the public service. So what you do if you have a... if you don't have a majority government, if you have minority governments, then you tend to shift the focus of concern, for better or for worse, from government and the bureaucracy more towards the parliament. But majority systems, the alternative vote, produces a system much like a plurality one. Parties can be decentralised to respond to local demands. That's, again, more for comparative purposes. You can have local members. In other words, it's not a list system, not run by a list system, produced by a party, perhaps in one place. Now, look, I've got lots more of these things. You look at the handouts on weekend three. There are pages 6 and 7. There are, I go through the kind of lists that Ken, on Ken's list of criteria. They're there in the handout. But what about the strengths of the majority system? So assessment, I got the strengths and then the weaknesses. Okay, majority systems, they produce one-party majority governments, all well-established. So that's, if you think that's a good idea, then that's certainly a strength of it. It produces local representatives chosen in and for each area. That's even if the district magnitude is more than one, it produces members on a geographical basis. Majority systems limit the representation of minor parties, but they do enable, as a kind of consolation prize, the supporters to contribute to the choice of large party candidates. This is not a guarantee. It's only if one of the large parties doesn't get a majority the first time round. But it means that if you are a supporter of a small party, your vote may choose between which of the large parties gets elected. And governments and members are accountable through a direct electoral contest. Again, that's for comparison with other systems we come to later on. Say if you have coalition governments, then one of the arguments is the government is not directly accountable because they have to compromise in the formation of a coalition. Okay, what about the weaknesses? Well, again, we've been there before. It distorts the vote-seats relationship. The alternative vote is not a proportional system. It is not intended to reflect accurately votes, seats as a proportion, in the same proportion as votes. It's a majority system. It's not a proportional system. They permit governments to dominate parliament as any plurality system does. So it's not peculiar in that. Minority interests, unless geographically concentrated, are not represented. They may have some involvement, but they are not represented. So wouldn't necessarily get more small parties. Small party voters, they appear to have a disproportionate effect in some contests. Winston Churchill really disliked the alternative vote, and it was suggested that Britain adopted in the 1920s. And he said it represented the most worthless votes of the most worthless candidates. So, and he thought it was a real affront that some minor party, the second preferences of the candidates, of the voters who voted for some minor party candidate, should be able to decide which of the two great Liberal or Conservative parties should, or the Labour Party was there too, should I should be elected. So the very thing that in some people's eyes is an advantage. That's, it gives minor party voters a consolation prize. They can choose between which two big parties get elected. Is seen by other people as a criticism. The small party voters get two bites at the cherry. Why should their second preferences count at all? If they're silly enough to vote for a small party, then why should they their second preferences be counted? It's, as with many things, it's a matter of taste. So even with a second ballot or AV preferences, that's both of them, many votes do not contribute to electing anyone. It's the question over there, Amanda, that just because you fill in a ballot or you go to a second election doesn't mean, and you vote for a small party, or even you vote for a big party. If it's not the biggest, the one that gets the majority of votes, then your votes may be seen to be wasted. So that's a criticism of it. Second ballot requires two elections. Some people say it costs a lot of money to run elections. Always a bit surprised about the argument about cost in elections. It probably, actually counting the votes, probably costs about half the cost of a replacement for a Sea King. I mean, it's not you're not talking big bucks here. Or maybe half the cost of a rotor of a Sea King helicopter. But the thing that costs money for elections is the subsidies that go to parties and other bits and pieces. But anyway, it does require two sets of elections. You have to go a week or 2 weeks apart. And, of course, the alternative vote requires a more complicated ballot. Perish the thought that people have to write numbers. And this is not a small issue. That is, particularly for people who, when you're in the transition, you move to a new system, there may be a significant proportion of the population who are not numerate anyway. They may be small but significant. And you may have other people who have difficulty putting numbers consecutively. Supposing you've got seven candidates, which is quite possible because there seems to be a trend in many systems for more and more people to run for election. And if you've got to fill in all the squares, then maybe you'll make a mistake or you leave one out. And different electoral systems have different rules for deciding whether the ballot is valid or not. So a more complicated ballot means that more ballots will be ruled as invalid and will be excluded. So you pay your money and you make your choice. If you want a more complicated ballot, then you're likely to have more errors. Okay. What about in BC? That's a big one, isn't it? Basically, it says that wouldn't be much change, but it would give the supporters of minor parties the chance of having some influence over which of the two largest parties won government. It was tried in BC for the provincial elections of 1952 and 53, and you've got the proof on the back of your handouts that it worked. Maybe it didn't work exactly the way the designers thought it would, but there were no complaints. Quick look at some of the articles on that were written by academics about it. Anyway, there was no enormous uproar about the difficulty of the ballot or the complaints about filling it in. So it certainly is an option. It's something that's been familiar in BC. Okay. Questions? Yes, at the back there.
I'm still not quite clear on why this is a two-party, winds up being a two-party system. If you have 79 ridings and you have five parties running in each riding and one party gets elected in each riding, depending on who wins the riding, you could have as many as five parties in your government.
Exactly, you could. So if parties are spread around geographically, supposing there was a Northern Party and a Kamloops Party and an independence in the Kootenays and half a dozen independents, or if there was a Vancouver Island Party, then indeed each of those areas would produce their own representatives. each of those contests in those areas would be between that party and one or other ones. And if they were the largest party, if they got if they got majorities, they would sit in the legislature.
So when you say it leads to a two-party system, you mean it leads to the better of two parties within each riding?
Yes. Okay. And you're making a very good technical point that some people say, well, a plurality system is only works the way people says it does in each electoral district. There's no guarantee it will operate that way over the system as a whole. But it so happens that most parties in Canada, now there are obviously exceptions like the PQ or the Bloc, tend to move towards two-party groupings. Actually, the Alliance, when it was around, was interested in the alternative vote precisely because it saw the choice in most parts of Canada as being a choice between the Liberals on the one hand and two largish Conservative parties on the other. And it felt that if there was the alternative vote, then it wouldn't have to merge with the Conservatives, as long as it could get the Conservatives, of course, or the PCs, as they then were, to exchange preferences with the Alliance. Of course, some people did their homework and found that some PCs would rather swap votes with the Liberals than with the Alliance. But that was the point. The point is that the majority system tends to work in favour of two large parties, and systems tend to be typified by large parties who want to control government, and that means that they have to get support across the province or across the country, and therefore there is a big incentive for parties to be system-wide so that they can capture government. But there's no guarantees. Yes. Am I looking in the right direction? Yes.
Over here. There, now it's on. I'm wondering, with second ballot voting, do they find a larger voter's turnout for the second vote than for the first?
Look, I don't know the answer in general. I know the answer for the French election, which was in the last one. They were very keen. The voters were pretty... The French used the second ballot for both the National Assembly and for the President. And actually the French... So if we look at the presidential vote in 2002, they were very worried. They thought the left abstained because they didn't think the left candidate had much of a choice. And when they saw the choice was between Chirac and someone even further to the right... They all turned out to the polls, were very keen, and voted again.
Exactly. This could change the whole picture.
Yes. Yeah, so second ballot gives you a second opportunity to think again, for all voters to vote, to change their minds if they wish. But actually, you can ask Andre, because he knows more about this than I do, and see whether that fall-off is noticeable. And don't forget, you have to take out the 58 people who didn't have to, 58 electoral districts, in the National Assembly, who already elected someone. So there's going to be fewer people voting the second time around anyway. Yeah. Yes. Yes, David.
This may be difficult for you to answer, but I'm just curious as to if anyone has looked at the impact of majority systems on the respect or lack of in which politicians are held.
Well, I can speak for Australia because Australians have a view of their politicians that is even lower than Canada. But I think that kind of thing has got probably more to do with the style of politics and the political culture and the history than with the voting system. But it's an interesting question. Why do politicians have such low esteem when the great bulk of them in most systems, well, the great bulk of them in all systems, try and do the best thing they can according to their lights? That's a plug for politicians. So, Edith.
In the AV system, if you, say, had seven candidates and you didn't have to rank them all in order, so some people only voted for one because they didn't want anybody else, could you at the end up with no winner whatsoever because there weren't any third choices or fourth choices or fifth choices to try to get a majority?
Well, you always get a winner, but you're right. One of the, for those of you who are really dead keen on this, there is today, even as we speak, there is an election being held in Queensland under the alternative vote. And in Queensland, they have optional preferential voting. And both the major parties, or the major party groupings, have said, well, there are three major parties, have said, just vote one. Okay? Because they want to undermine the chance of any other party other than the three of them being able to benefit from their preferences. But what it means is if you do need preferences, you have to have another category. You have to have ballots that are called exhaust or exhausted. So you have to put on one side. So the pool of ballots actually affecting the result might get quite small. So you will always get a winner, but it might depend on the preferences of just a handful of voters, if it's really close.
So it's the majority of the votes at the end as opposed to the majority you started with in the beginning?
The majority declines is the votes in play in each phase. Yeah. Yes.
If the majority system rewards just two parties, do you think if we had it today in BC that we'd actually have an opposition in Victoria? An opposition party?
You'd have to ask Ken. My guess from looking at the results is very briefly and not for this purpose, is there may have been a few more NDP candidates elected on green preferences. In other words, the question is how many Liberal candidates were plurality winners, not and didn't get majorities, and in the cases where they only got a plurality, were there enough Green or other party preferences to push the NDP candidate into a majority position? My guess is, just extrapolating from my experience with AV systems elsewhere, is it probably between 5 and 10 more, perhaps. But the sums are easy to do. Yes.
Under this system, however, depending on the local vote, you could end up with obviously more than one party in the legislature, could you not? Like, say, the Green Party, if they were strong in an area, even as a second choice, and the NDP was third, and if that was the preference, they could be bumped up. So this can lead to multi-party legislatures.
It could. Well, that's the same under a plurality system. If the votes are geographically concentrated, say the Australian Country Party, now the National Party, has benefited because its supporters, surprise, are in the country, and they tend to vote for a particular party. So they have a local, a strong local base, and they do exchange preferences with their coalition partner. So if you're running two, supposing there are, let's not use actual cases, but let's suppose the case to our famous X, Y, and Z again. If Y and Z are the same ideological persuasion, and they don't want X to sneak through the middle with a plurality, because they think that between the two of them, Y and Z, they would have a majority, you've got two options. One of them is for make an agreement between the parties that only one of they'll only field one candidate, in which case one of them, if they'll maximise their choice, assuming the voters will vote for whichever candidate you put up. The other way, under AV, is to run two candidates, one X and one Y, or one Y and one Z, and to get them to exchange preferences. I should say that this is on the assumption you can discipline your voters to vote the way you want them to. And that may be tricky. In Australia, they have a thing called a how-to-vote card, which is, as it implies, is you take into the ballot box, into the booth, a sheaf of these papers, each with each party, with a party-preferred order. And basically, it's saying to you, look, don't think. Just pick the ballot of the colour that your party has and just fill in the numbers in the way we say. You know, we don't want any confusion here. Just fill it in the party-preferred order. But some voters are miscreant, and they don't do that. They follow them in their own order. Yeah. Okay. Well, I've even finished early. How about that? Thank you.